and welcome to Ending Physician Overwhelm. I'm your host, Dr. Megan Mello. I'm a family and obesity medicine physician, as well as a certified life coach for physicians. In this podcast, we talk about how the learned habits of people-pleasing, perfectionism, and a lack of boundaries show up in our lives and how they contribute to burnout, exhaustion, and overwhelm. The healthcare system is broken, my friends, but let's not wait for it to be fixed in order to feel better.
Hello, my friends, and welcome to the episode. Today, we're going to be talking about the challenge of sitting with yourself. And so let me start with just a simple question. When was the last time that you sat quietly with yourself? Not because you were waiting for an appointment, not because you were stuck in the car in traffic. What I'm asking is when was the last time that you sat quietly with yourself on purpose, allowing the thoughts in your brain? This is a very real challenge for so many of us. I've talked with so many physicians and advanced practice providers who are constantly on the go, always moving, always feeling like they should be doing something. And if they do have a quiet moment, grabbing their phone, scrolling Instagram, making a to-do list, watching cat videos, always something. And I'm not trying to call anyone out here for these behaviors. I'm 100% guilty of this. As with so many other things, I'm a work in progress here in the struggle. But why is it so hard for us to sit quietly without our phones, without the to-do list, and not immediately jump up and start running around and doing things? When I sat down to answer this question, here's the list of things that came to my mind. I don't have time to sit quietly. I should be doing something. When would I do this? Why would I do this? I've tried that before and it didn't work. I can't get a moment's peace. Why on earth would I even think about doing that? These are common reasons why someone might feel it would be ridiculous to sit quietly with yourself. But the most common reason is something that we don't talk about enough. And that is that for so many of us, we don't like the thoughts that constantly swirl in our head, creating feelings of anxiety, pressure, overwhelm, anger, resentment, frustration, fear. If we were to sit quietly and just allow our thoughts to unfold, what we might hear might feel like a whole lot of negativity and feelings that we don't want to feel. We've talked on the show before about numbing behaviors and buffering, and these things are the things that you find yourself doing to feel better, to distract yourself or to reward yourself, maybe for a tough day, maybe because you're feeling something you don't want to feel and you want to be distracted, but these things ultimately don't align with what you want for yourself. So some examples of this are, reaching for ice cream, pouring an extra 2 or 3 glasses of wine at night, scrolling Instagram for 3 hours after a busy day instead of going to bed, staying late at clinic, sort of working on your notes or your inbox, but not really in an effective or productive way. Now, it isn't to say that every time you scoop up some ice cream, that this is what's going on. But when you're routinely reaching for some of these things or routinely in the habit of overworking, trying to get that inbox zero glory as a way to distract yourself and then later feel bad about it, you know what I'm talking about. It's not really helping you. Much of the reason that we don't like sitting with ourselves is that we are unwilling and perhaps even fearful of really noticing our thoughts and feelings. If you've been socialized as a woman and if you've been through medical training, more likely than not, you've been taught to put your feelings aside for the sake of other people. This is how you've been trained, and you're a good learner. But the consequences of constantly pushing your emotions aside for the sake of other people leads to significant disconnect from your own emotions, as well as often a simmering resentment and frustration and overwhelm. This combination, a habit of pushing your feelings aside, as well as a chronic current of frustration, resentment, and overwhelm, leads to a really unpleasant internal state. Your thoughts are negative. Your emotions are unpleasant to feel. if you're experiencing a fear of feeling your feelings because of what might happen if you really let them be expressed, or maybe you're feeling self-judgment because what kind of person are you to be feeling so resentful all the time? No wonder we don't want it to get quiet. We would have to confront the negative thoughts that feel immutable, as well as the negative emotions that they produce. It's much easier to push these feelings away with numbing and this pattern than to sit and really understand what your thoughts really are. That seems so much harder. Before I knew anything about coaching and the practice of learning to sit still with your thoughts and feelings, I remember really struggling with that myself. And I don't say that because I currently live in a perfect state of bliss, because that is not true. But I say that as someone who has learned that when I'm having feelings that are unpleasant, I have the option to look inside and ask myself why I'm feeling this way. And if I can go there, if I can figure out what I'm thinking that's leading to these emotions, then I have an opportunity to figure out if I want to keep thinking these thoughts. But before I learned this work, if I sat still with my thoughts, listening to my thoughts would simply produce a state where I felt like I must be the worst person in the world. So negative, so cynical, so judgmental. It didn't feel like the person I thought I was, and it certainly didn't feel like the person I wanted to be. Didn't feel like the person I used to be. But I couldn't yet understand this was a consequence of my socialization as a woman, as a helper, as a caring professional. And I couldn't yet understand that my negative thought patterns were not permanent. If this sounds familiar, if you've tried meditation and quickly given up because the thoughts in your head were bothering you too much, and you find you can't even unwind on vacation because your brain is filled with too many to-dos and won't let you relax, please know that you are not alone. This is such a common pattern and refrain from so many highly capable, brilliant women physicians and advanced practice providers and other caring professionals and other kind-hearted people. You are not alone. And not only are you not alone, but you also have an opportunity to change the way that you think. If that sounds unbelievable, I hear you. And if you feel that the way that you think now, the thought patterns that you have now, don't feel like what they don't feel like the person that you are, then that tells me that the way that you think about the world now is different from the way that you thought about it in the past, right? Perhaps as a child, you had a sunny outlook on life, and over the course of your education and your socialization and your medical training, you pick up the message that your purpose is to serve other people, meet their expectations, rather than to listen to your own needs and wants. The person that you were as a child experienced a radical change in the way that they think, not from the simple process of moving from a child brain to an adult brain, but because of culture and socialization and training and overt and covert messages about how you ought to be in the world. Brains change. Thought patterns change. Beliefs change. Your thoughts and your thought patterns and your beliefs have been influenced by other people, as is natural in any kind of society. But that doesn't mean that you can't choose to think for yourself and decide what you want to think and believe. So how does one possibly get started with this work? That's the question that people come to me with when they're coming for coaching, because they're aware of their negative thought patterns and the emotions that they feel if they stop to notice. They may not understand why they have all these negative thoughts and why it feels so gross inside emotionally. They may not understand why they aren't happy when they, quote unquote, have it all and, quote unquote, should be happy. In my experience, these issues are hallmarks of burnout. When you feel so bothered and alarmed by your thought patterns and your negative emotions, especially with regard to patients and other people that you're called to serve, that's when people tend to seek help, right? We know something's wrong when we're really resentful of the very people that we wanted to help in the first place. But we can't fix the problem until we're aware of its existence. And so even though this experience of feeling like you're drowning in negative thoughts and emotions is one that I wish you'd never have to have, It can, in fact, be an important turning point in someone's life. When they realize that they no longer wish to think and believe the things that they have come to think and believe. And so let's talk about some simple steps to take if you find yourself in this place. Number one, start to intentionally be aware of your thoughts. The most straightforward way to do this is to get into the habit of doing some kind of practice where you unload your brain. Some call this a thought download. Others call it a brain dump or a stream of consciousness writing. It doesn't really matter what you call it. It doesn't really matter whether it's written or spoken. But practice sitting and either writing or saying your thoughts out loud without judgment, without editing, just letting them out. Sometimes this might be done with the solitude of our pen, sometimes with a coach or a therapist, or someone that we trust. But without doing this work, without getting curious about your default thought patterns and the sentences that run through your brain all day, it's really hard to feel good. Some of you may not be believing that this could be helpful, but humor me for a moment. Listen to the sound of these thoughts and imagine these thoughts filling up your brain all day long. The patient showed up late and now my day is ruined. I just need to get through this day. I can't believe she's asking me that again. Not again. I can't handle this today. Why are they doing this to me? I just want to go home. I'm going to quit. How am I going to keep doing this for the next 20 years? So if you did a brain dump and you saw a lot of sentences like this pouring out of you, how would you expect to feel? Just reading it feels icky. And unfortunately, it reminds me of so many years that I spent being miserable, not understanding how my pattern thoughts were contributing to the way that I felt. You see, it's not helpful to blame ourselves when this happens, when our thoughts are very negative. And unfortunately, no one can change these thought patterns for us. If we've come to have these thought patterns where we have lots of negative thoughts running through our brain, resisting reality, feeling like we just can't do it, this creates a really unpleasant emotional experience for us running in the background as we navigate our busy days. Makes it harder to get the work done, makes it really hard to relax and enjoy yourself even when you have the time. It makes things so hard. So although it can seem challenging and unpleasant to start this kind of practice and really start to notice and understand these negative thought patterns, only through noticing are we really able to make changes. Step two, name your emotions. So in step one, we're trying to build the habit of becoming aware of our default thoughts that run through our heads. You know, in the background, think of it as, oh, insert a computer term here for a default program that's running quietly in the background, but it's slowing everything down. Step two is about learning to recognize the emotional state either in the moment or right after that's dragging us down. What is the feeling? What is the emotion that you have? If you've been really disconnected from your body, as many of us have been, and really disconnected from your emotions, you may need help to do this. But it can be helpful to start by noticing the sensations in your body. When you're having an emotion, what happens? Do your cheeks get flushed? Do you feel palpitations? Do you notice anything in your chest or your belly or your hands? What does your body feel like? And can you tie those physical sensations to an emotion? Studies have shown that when we do this, when we start to name our emotions and notice these bodily sensations, we're better able to process and digest the emotions, which actually allows them to feel better faster. The goal here is not to immediately shove the feelings away. If that were the goal, we would just continue to ignore them and hope for the best. The goal here is to notice the sensations, to name the emotion, and start to really connect the dots. Because once we can name the emotion, we can get curious and we can start to really notice the underlying thoughts and situations that routinely trigger certain emotions. For example, if we commonly feel resentful when patients are late, we may notice that we think they don't respect our time. And, you know, that might be associated with other thoughts, including a thought like, oh, I'm going to be late all day, or I have to give them the full appointment time because otherwise they're going to be upset. Noticing the emotions allows us to identify usually a bunch of thoughts that we may not have been consciously aware of. But when we name the emotion and we get curious and we see the thoughts, that we again have an opportunity to decide which thoughts are helpful, which thoughts do we want to keep, which thoughts we're going to question, which thoughts we want to reject, because some of the thoughts that we have are just not helpful. For example, you may think that it is never appropriate to disappoint a patient. You might think that you must always meet their expectations. But when this is true, you may also find yourself prescribing medications that you don't feel right about, or ordering blood work or other testing that doesn't seem helpful or necessary because you're afraid of disappointing the patient. And so if you notice that you feel pressured or worried about not meeting their expectations, you have the opportunity to look at these thoughts that you have, to look at this fear of not disappointing them, and decide what's okay and what's not okay for you. Step 3, decide if you want to keep the thought. This is another tricky spot for us, and one that we can sometimes use against ourselves, so stay with me here. When we do the work of noticing our thoughts and feelings, identifying patterned ways of thinking, we have the opportunity to decide whether we want to keep our thoughts. For example, knowing human behavior, is it helpful for me? Does it serve me to keep thinking the thoughts that I currently have about late patients? If I currently make it mean that they don't respect my time or that they don't value the work that I do, does this thought help me during my day, or is it just creating stress and resentment? Is there a different thought that I would want to have? And I don't give this example to suggest that we ought to never have a thought about them being late. But do we want to keep the thought that we currently have? Is there a different thought that I'd rather have? Sometimes we can identify a new thought that seems reasonable, and it can be easy to practice thinking the new thought. When the situation occurs and the old thought flashes through, we can gently remind ourselves, well, actually, I don't have to make it mean anything about me that they were late. I'm practicing being clear and kind and limiting the visit for today. Sometimes the new thought might feel too far away from what we currently think. And we might have to identify some bridging thoughts, like, it's possible that their lateness has nothing to do with me, because we just can't go to this place, right, of thinking something a little bit more neutral yet. So that's called bridging thoughts, or sometimes ladder thoughts, where we know that we would like to change the way we think about late patients, for example, but we aren't ready to make a big jump. We have to move more slowly. Think about swinging from one thought to the next, like a kid crossing the monkey bars. Sometimes we will also notice thoughts that we absolutely want to keep. For example, if I read something in the news about a political situation and I notice myself feeling angry because maybe reproductive rights or transgender rights are being stripped away, I don't have to decide to change my thoughts on that. I like my reason for having my thoughts about personal rights. I can start to take care of myself differently if I decide that I like my thoughts, but you know, maybe I want to handle my anger differently. Maybe I want to pause and, you know, give myself a moment to allow the anger to be there. But notice here that there's a big difference, right? Here I'm talking about adding choice and awareness rather than feeling like something is being done to me if I happen to, you know, read the article or listen to a story on NPR, right? I have choice in how I want to do things. I can keep my thoughts, but I'm going to find some way to take care of my anger in a different way than just assuming that I just have to put up with it. Those of you who are familiar with mindful meditation, you may be familiar with this idea of noticing thoughts like clouds rolling across the sky. Sometimes it's quite challenging to do this, but if we take these 3 steps, if we start to become aware of our thoughts, naming our emotions, deciding what thoughts we want to keep, it's a way to do this process. Learning to incorporate these steps into our lives helps us to not be afraid of sitting with ourselves. And it doesn't mean you need to pick up meditation or go to a silent retreat, but you can see that if you currently struggle with this, nothing is wrong with you. And you have an opportunity to learn how to be able to sit with yourself because you have a process now that helps you break it down. People who do this work can become more compassionate with themselves, identifying that they aren't just a negative person, but that their current patterns of thinking are creating a lot of negativity and that there is an option to change it without just jumping into Pollyanna-ish thinking. Nothing is wrong with you, and you are not broken. You've just been conditioned and trained to push through, to ignore your feelings, to work hard. And as a consequence of that, your brain has adopted a negativity bias that you can learn to undo. And then things don't feel so hard. They don't feel so awful because you are leaning in and using tools to take care of yourself, right? You have the tools. It helps you to not be afraid to be with yourself. And I'm going to say this one more time. Nothing is wrong with you if you find this challenging. And you can help yourself by doing this work. You don't have to make this choice at all. You can keep things the way that they are. And, you know, there's absolutely comfort in the familiar, right? It's the devil that you know. But just imagine how it might feel if you did decide to do this. If you did decide to open the lid and peek inside your own brain to learn yourself better and give yourself options, what will that create for you? Will that create more emotional bandwidth? Will it create more space? Will you realize the fears that are currently holding you back from something that you really want to do? Right? Will you realize that you're in a relationship that isn't serving you anymore? There's lots of reasons why we can be fearful of doing this work. It makes sense on so many levels. But imagine what opens up for us when we actually sit and do it. My friends, this is what I have for you today. Please come back and listen again to this episode if you need to. And I invite you to reach out if you have questions. You'll find me at my website, www.healthierforgood.com. And I welcome your questions and feedback. Until next week, be well and take care.
Well, that's our show for today. Thank you as always for listening. To learn more about my coaching programs, head to www.healthierforgood.com. And if you love this podcast, please drop us a review on iTunes or support the show by clicking the link in the show notes. Until next time, take care.